As the banks get healthier, is it time to stop worrying about them?
This podcast is supported by 23andMe DNA Kit, designed to provide over 200 personalized health reports and knowledge to make informed personal health decisions. Your DNA Kit is available at 23andMe.com/marketplace.
From APM in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Friday, the 12th of April. And we got a look at the health of two major banks this morning. JP Morgan Chase said it made a profit of $6.5 billion last quarter. That's up 33% from the same quarter a year ago. Wells Fargo, meanwhile, said its profit was up 23% last quarter compared with a year ago. Now, both of these banks have been putting aside less money for losses. That makes their numbers look better. But the health of these banks brings up an interesting question, which is, if the banks are doing so well, can we stop worrying about the possibility that they're going to take down the entire economy? Here's Marketplace's Mark Garrison.
With record profits on the books, life is certainly a lot better for the largest banks.
I definitely don't think there's nearly as much to worry about now as there was 5 or 6 years ago.
Jim Sinegal is a Morningstar bank analyst. These companies are playing it safer in several ways. For one, there is literally more money in the banks.
Capital levels at all of the big banks have doubled, tripled, or even more since the depths of the financial crisis. And that's the biggest thing contributing to the safety of the financial system.
It's one thing to be healthy when the economy is recovering, and the big banks did survive the Fed's latest simulated crisis. But Mauro Gielen of the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School has a reminder.
We will only find out whether the new situation now is a better one for the country, for the economy, for the consumer, when the next crisis comes by.
It'll take more than quarterly earnings reports to figure that out. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Well, one business sector that has been turning out very strong earnings reports as well recently is the auto industry. Last month, Chrysler, GM, and Ford had their best month of sales in 5 years. But all that is concerning to Marketplace Economics correspondent Chris Farrell, who joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, so why, Chris, would strong sales in the auto industry be something to worry about?
Well, it's not something we need to worry about in the sense of I'm happy that we have auto sales and we have a stronger economy. And this is one of the bright spots in our economy, right? But
yeah,
there's a trend that's really worrisome. When you look at the data from Experian, the credit reporting bureau, they said a lot of these loans, they're coming with terms of 73 to 84 months. That's 6 to 7 years, Jeremy. That's a long time to be taking out an auto loan. And on average, the auto loans, on average, for new cars, greater than 5 years.
So people are taking out longer loans with smaller monthly payments, and you're saying that that's a cause for concern because maybe they can't afford to pay them off or what?
That's right. Well, it has an echo of problems that we were seeing in 2003 and 2004, 2005. And you're absolutely right. You get that low monthly payment. You think, oh, boy, I can afford this. This is really good. But if you think about an auto loan, and, you know, the car depreciates with time, eventually you owe a lot more than the car is worth.
Yeah.
In 6 to 7 years, that's a long period of time. I mean, think about your life and I think about my life. You know, a lot of things can change in 6, 7 years. And then if you have to sell this car, you're going to be taking a loss.
So, of course, the thing that comes to mind, Chris, is the subprime mortgage crisis where people were borrowing a lot of money that they couldn't pay back. And these were sort of reckless loans. Is there a comparison here?
Well, no, Jeremy. I mean, look. The housing market, the blow up in the housing market, that took down the economy, as you said. The whole auto loan market could blow up and it's not going to take down the U.S. economy. But, you know, there's cold comfort in that because think about the borrowers who are stretching and then they're buying a car they can't afford and they're taking loans that are really bad loans, bad terms, going on too long. So my concern is a lot of individuals are starting to stretch and they're going to financially suffer. And we've gone through 5 really tough years.
Marketplace Economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks as always.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
This podcast is supported by 23andMe, a personal DNA kit so individuals can better understand how their genes impact health, which means individuals and their doctors find health areas to keep an eye on. 23andMe also gives ancestry information and helps discover global origins or perhaps find relatives. Available today at 23andme.com/marketplace. That's the number 23andme.com/marketplace.
Disney is letting go of 9 animators from its hand-drawn animation team a month after it announced it has no further plans to work in the traditional 2D animation format. Its CEO Bob Iger sees more money in 3D and CGI animation. So is this the beginning of the end of hand-drawn? Marketplace's David Weinberg reports.
In 1908, Emile Cole debuted what is widely considered to be the first animated film ever, Phantasmagorie. 20 years later, Walt Disney released his own animated short, this time with sound. It was called Steamboat Willie, and it featured a black and white mouse named Mickey. But the process of drawing individual animation cells was time-consuming. When Disney released his first feature film, Snow White, in 1937, it had taken 3 years to complete.
He had to keep hiring animators because he was realizing, oh my God, I'm never going to get this project in time.
Dana Hawks is an animation arts consultant at Bonhams.
So now it doesn't take quite as long as that, probably half that time.
Moviegoers don't seem to miss hand-drawn animation, though. Disney's recent hand-drawn features, The Princess and the Frog and Winnie the Pooh, both made significantly less money than Disney's latest computer-animated feature, Wreck-It Ralph, which grossed nearly $200 million at the box office. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
And finally, today is National Grilled Cheese Day, and in my opinion, the best way to make a grilled cheese is actually pretty boring. Just throw some cheddar on 2 pieces of white bread and put it in a pan, fry it up with some butter, maybe olive oil if you're feeling really Mediterranean or something like that. Have it with some tomato soup. That's perfect in my book. But what is your favorite way to make a grilled cheese? Go to the APM Marketplace Facebook page and let us know. And I'm just going to look on there right now and see what some of our listeners have sent in. With provolone cheese, tomato, fresh basil. That sounds pretty good. Seeded rye bread, Munster cheese, Dijon mustard, butter. A lot of people like to put Dijon mustard on their grilled cheese. That sounds pretty interesting. And then here's one that actually looks very good to me. Sourdough, avocado, bacon, tomatoes, and jalapenos. I could definitely get used to that. Anyway, go to the APM Marketplace Facebook page. You can check out what others have said and also tell us what your favorite way to make a grilled cheese is. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.